かれてしまう。
So, sometimes the question comes up is, you know, what is religion? What is religion, or what is the need of religion?So we see if we study something, then the scriptures in India describe that religion isn't something that is connected to any, you know, one place or any one time. But religion is what is the nature of something. This is a very unique definition. No, it is not well discussed.Example is given, religion is something that you can't change. It's the inherent nature of something. Just like water, its wetness is its religion. Or fire, the heat and light, that's its religion. Or sugar, its sweetness, that's its religion. So then, with this kind of understanding, then the sages in India, then they would contemplate,Or what is the religion of various things? So they would study the material elements, you know, what is the nature of earth, you know, its fragrance, that's something you can't separate. Like when you plow the field, then you get a fragrance, and a very pleasant smell. You know, the water, its wetness, the fire, its heat and light, you know, this air, its, you know, ability to carry things, the ether, its ability to accommodate things.So like this, they also then study the nature of the mind, the mind's, its activity of accepting and rejecting, that whatever it is in life that we are interested in or not interested in, this is based on the mind. The mind will see things, it will contemplate, and it will decide that this I like, this I don't like.And the intelligence, its nature, is that it is able to discriminate between things, decide, break things apart into, like you have something, it will break it down into its components. At the same time, as it can also put various components back together again, so connect something from here or there and make it into something. These are the activities of the intelligence.So then this way they could separate the nature of the mind from the intelligence. Then the ego, that we, how we identify, that we identify with this material body, with our senses, with our mind, with our intelligence. And we call this ourselves. But then they notice that also the nature of what we see of this world is temporary.And this world is not, it doesn't last. It means the energy itself is there, but the transformations don't last. You build a house, you know, it lasts for some years, then it starts to, it needs maintenance, and eventually it needs reconstruction. Civilizations are created, then they move on. People are born, they grow, they live, they multiply, then they dwindle, they die.So here, nothing is eternal. So then, but the problem comes is that even though we've gone through whatever is there in us, we've gone through the elements of the body, we've gone through the elements of the subtle body or the mind, intelligence, and ego, but there still remains something undealt with, is that.The living entity looking for happiness, they don't want this happiness to be temporary. It was very natural. It means everyone in this world has died. The mortality rate of this world has been 100%. There's never been any exceptions to the rule, no matter how great, how powerful, or how famous, or beautiful, or wealthy. Everyone's moved on. So since it is such a natural thing,then one would think, well, why then are people disturbed about dying? Why is it no one wants to die? No one wants to move on when everybody does it? You know, it's like nobody complains that water's wet. It's just everyone, yes, it's wet. You stick your finger in the fire and you get burnt. then no one's shocked. And maybe a little small child is, they don't know the nature, but an adult's not shocked. They know, you stick your finger in the fire, you get burnt. So the same time as you're born, you'll die. But people aren't pleased with this. They're not happy with this. They don't want to acknowledge this. Many times even people will, the discussion about death comes up, they don't want to discuss it because it's not a topic that they want to know about. So then this means that then the sages then could understand there's something beyond. There's something greater. That I that we are thinking is us is not really the body, or is not really the mind or intelligence, but then is another substance, the soul. And they, by studying then the Vedic literatures, then they could understand that the soul being there, the soul, that is eternal. And the soul then being spiritual, then was made of three elements, of eternality, of knowledge, and of happiness. And because of this, then we see that all living entities, human beings, animals, plants, they all have the same thing, is that they're looking for maintaining life forever, no one wants to die, and they're pursuing happiness and knowledge. We see this no matter what culture, what person, what species, what gender, that this is the common principle of all living entities. Therefore, the idea that one will die, the idea that one will be unhappy, is not something that anybody wants, or to be in ignorance. And everyone wants to be in knowledge, they want to be up to date. So therefore, you can see, therefore things, the news media, the newspapers, magazines, anything that will give us knowledge, then we are very eager for, because we want to inform ourselves. We want to live forever. We want to be happy. So we see this commonality then bonds together all living entities, all souls, no matter what place, what country, what age, what background, anything. So then it's understood that then now we're getting close to the, means the religion of the soul. So then we see that the soul then has to have a source. And that source then, by study, then could be seen that then that's coming from the Supreme Person. That we as persons come from persons. We see in this world also, any species comes from the same species. So therefore, the living entity, which is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, has to be coming from the original eternal. And then, because of that, then what brings out is how the living entity, its real religion, is service. The natural position of anyone is to serve. We gain our happiness from serving, actually. Sometimes it is said, you know, thinking when we are in control or we're enjoying, that's really, you know, when we're happy. But actually we see, if we look, we gain that by service. Right? The parents, they gain happiness serving the children. Technically, they're in control of the children. They're the authorities. What they say goes is how things work. What they feel is best is what the child should, you know, be trained in and do. But actually, that is done, though, through the medium of service. Then there's some happiness. Friendship also is that if it's a close friendship, you serve the other person. What they like you to do, you do. And then what you like them to do, they do. So this nourishes that relationship. Or husband and wife, the husband tries to take care of the desires and needs of the wife of the husband. So that service, so that we see actually comes down to be the real religion of the soul, is service. Sometimes people will consider, well, I won't serve anybody. You know, this society, there's, you know, things are wrong. I don't like the way things go, so I'll give up this, and they'll go to the forest, they'll go out somewhere. But still, then you have to serve the body. The body has to be taken care of, you must feed the body, you must maintain the body, take care of the body. So then, we see is that that service must be done. So then, it was, the next step was then taken, that the sages then were looking to see, well, how to apply this. All these natures we've seen, religions of the elements of the body, religions of the elements of the subtle body, the mind and ego and intelligence, and then the religion of the soul, how to combine that, that it's, there's some benefit for the living entity. Because people want to be benefited. No one wants to be not benefited. Everyone's trying to, you know, upgrade themselves, uplift themselves, improve themselves in some way, improve their mind by reading or, you know, expanding their thoughts, improve their physical position by improving whatever facilities they have, improve their relationships by trying to, you know more, deepen whatever interaction they have with others. So then it was seen that there must be something you can pull it all together. Because if you deal with one at a time, it may not create the proper, community in oneself, you know, or like a holistic approach to one's own needs or one's own religion. So then they saw that, okay, the body has to be taken care of in certain ways, that certain things are beneficial for this. And so then from this then developed the whole science of the Indian medicine called the Ayurveda, which was based on, you know, natural herbs or more strong than on various minerals and all that. And if not, then on very potent medicines that if they are taken not during disease or not during in the wrong proportions, maybe even poisonous to the body if diseases were powerful. But they would see is what is the nature of the body and what it needed, that, you know, what kind of regulation it required, what kind of food it required. And then they would see that these various things, then they create health. And then the needs of the mind has desires, the mind wants to be happy. And so then the mind has sees different ideas how to be happy. You know, they want to be happy by, let's say, getting money or fame or some position or a relationship with somebody, or, you know, so simple as just something to eat, you know, or a particular thing that one wants to eat. So obtaining that, then we find happiness. So then the mind, its happiness is then gained by, when it gains what it will consider itself will make it happy, it's happy. Whether it actually brings happiness or not, that's another thing. You know, there's the saying, one man's food is another man's poison. You know, I remember one person was telling me when he was, you know, young and in the 60s as a hippie and doing all so many varieties of things, then his father said, what makes you happy makes you crazy. You know? So like this, it's like the father, to him, it's craziness. But to the son, it was happiness. So how could you explain that this would happen? It's because what the mind considers of value and of obtaining that, that's called happiness. So that moment we gain it, we're called happy. Before we gain it, it's called hankering. We're desiring it. After we've gained it and things move on and things become ordinary, then we think of the past or what we've lost, and that's lamentation. So that moment when we gain something, then we're happy. So then they could see is that then we should be trying to gain those things that are actually in nature. It means the mind must be happy. That's its nature. And it will desire and reject. So by training the mind on what things are, that's the religion of the mind. So that means the religion of the mind shouldn't go against the religion of the body or the religion of the intelligence. You know, there must be some compatibility here. So things that are good for the body, good for the health of the body, then that should become, by training, the desire of the mind. Then upon attaining that, one is happy. One attains good health, one attains. So then they developed also the system of yoga to bring together the mind and the intelligence and the body, so that one's health and the mind, everything became synthesized. So by this yoga, then they were able to bring it all together. Yoga means to connect. And then of these systems of yoga, then the contemplation came, well, what do you emphasize? If we emphasize the body, then in that yoga, then we take up the process of karma. Karma means the fruit of process of action and results. You do something, you get a result. Like you do a good work, you'll get a good result. You do a bad work, you'll get a bad result. So this is, in Sanskrit, what they call karma. So good karma means things will give you a good result. Bad karma means things will give you a bad result. So now, if you emphasize this, then the mind, the intelligence, everything becomes focused and brought into the needs of the body, the situation, and also of the subtle body. You know, one is pleased if one is is respected. One is happy if one has a good position. You know, and one has money, one has facility, one has good relations with the family. So then, by emphasizing this, they develop the system of karma yoga. So some sages develop this system. But then the problem is the karma is still, dealing with the gross and subtle body is temporary. So therefore, actually the needs of the soul aren't really taken care of. We've synthesized very nicely the gross and subtle body, focused around the mind. But the needs of the soul weren't really taken care of. So then, some then develop the system of jnana. Jnana means knowledge. So then they would focus on the knowledge of the soul. The soul is eternal, the material world is temporary, the senses also are temporary. It means when we're young, they work very nicely. But as we get older, they don't work so well. The eyes aren't so good, the taste isn't so good, the strength and everything. Until in old age, one practically can't enjoy the senses at all. So then there's a great frustration in this. So how will actually be satisfied? You know, it's very nice when we're young, but when we're older, there's a weakness there. There's something wrong. So then they developed, and we see relationships. Sometimes they're good, then they break off, then they're bad. And whatever we expected out of a relationship, sometimes we get it, most of the times we don't. So then in this system of jnana, then they would look at the negative side of the material world and material relationships, material endeavors, and focus on the soul. And so then they came up with the idea that the soul will be eternal and it will merge into the eternal, and in this way become one with the eternal, and in this be satisfied because there's no material distress. And so for many sages, they found that this was, you know, very good. They became austere, they gave up the material world, they became renounced, they would go to the forest, and in this way contemplate these things, do their meditation and everything. And so then also many became, you know, satisfied for some time. But then they saw that the soul, being eternality, knowledge, and bliss comes from relationships, interactions. So then it was seen that these interactions then must be had with another living entity. So if you've gone to the forest, you're contemplating your own liberation, your own salvation, and you're not interacting with others, then there was a lack. And in this, then there was all these relationships, you know, the friendship relationship, the parental relationship, the conjugal relationship, you know, those that you appreciate, you know, those that you like to serve. So these relationships weren't addressed by this method. But at the same time, is when they are addressed on the level of karma, they're temporary. While addressing the soul, it's eternal, but it doesn't address all the aspects of the soul. It addressed eternality of the soul, but it didn't really address the full nature of the soul, of looking for happiness through interaction. So then, these sages then developed through the scriptures, studying the scriptures, the system of bhakti. Bhakti means devotion. Then they saw that we're eternal and we must therefore interact with eternal. So that supreme eternal, being the Lord, then if we interacted with God, then we could actually, all the elements of the soul were in place. And then we could actually get eternal satisfaction. So then the process developed, and they found that this bhakti yoga then took care of the needs of the soul on the eternal platform. But then, that's great, it worked nicely if one was already detached from the material nature. One was already detached from our conditioning of the activities that we know it in this world. It means we know of relationships, we don't know of the spiritual. We know of husband and wife and father and child and friend like this. But of this world, the relationships between the gross and subtle bodies of the living entities, but not of the living entities themselves. So then you had the relationships here and the relationships there. So how to synthesize that? Then the process within God consciousness of what's called sadhana bhakti. Means bhakti is the pure state of yoga or connecting with the Supreme. But for those who have not already obtained it, there must be a path by which they could attain it. So then develop the process of sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti, then sadhana means practice. So by practice, then one would understand what is the transcendental nature. But it would be done in conjunction with one's material or conditioned nature. It means that we cannot immediately give up our body or our identification with the body or our mind and intelligence, our ego. So then these scriptures then showed how to step by step identify these things connected to the Supreme. So then the living entity was able to, the sages were able to show how that whatever is here in this world is a reflection of what's in the spiritual world. That the material world is a temporary place, while the spiritual world being an eternal place, all the things we're looking for are going on there eternally. But the difference being there it's in connection with the Lord, and here it's in connection with the material energy. So then it was seen that if one could practice, could regulate the body, regulate the mind and intelligence, then the living entity was able to distinguish between the soul and the gross and subtle body. Because otherwise, by habit, we identify with the body as us. But at the same time, as we see, it's not a great identification, because a teenager feels young and youthful. But if you ask a 50, 60-year-old person, they inside feel the same, youthful. So there's something incongruous here. So then, but one has to have a method on which one can separate that. Because by habit, everyone calls you by your body. You know, you're a man, you're a woman, you're old, you're young, you're you know, they'll say you're black, you're white, you're yellow, you're red, you're whatever. You'll be identified by that. So everybody's calling you. So it's natural. So there needs to be a process by which one can then separate oneself from this. Be able to work within it, but at the same time being able to be making spiritual advancements. So then the whole science then in Bhakti Yoga then came up on how to engage, you know, the family life, and understand God through the family life, understand God through one's work, occupational duties, understand God through the process of knowledge and activities. So then this developed in this whole science of understanding then the nature of everything. Then one could work, but the nature of everything in connection with God. That God has created, you know, mankind. So therefore mankind acts in a certain way. It's coming from God. What is that nature? What is a man? What is human? You know, within human, what is a man? What is a woman? What is their nature? Man has certain desires. Woman has another desires. But they each want to be with each other. So what is the needs they each expect from each other? A friend wants to be with a friend. What does he expect from that friend? Or a parent and a child. What does a child expect from the parent? Or a parent from a child? A teacher from a student, or a student from a teacher? Or a leader from their, from the common, you know, their civilians, and the civilians from their leader. So then, studying this, then they develop this, the social systems on which, by knowledge of who you are, means who we are, meaning on all these levels, on the level of the soul, on the level of the gross body, and on the level of the subtle body. We know the nature of the gross body, the nature of the subtle body, and the nature of the soul. Then we apply that within what's the nature of the species of life we're in. And, you know, as humans, then male or female. Okay, then with that. Then other relationships, how we're dealing as a male, then how do we deal with, you know, women that are older than us, women that are equal, women that are junior, women that are our mother, women that are our wife, women that are our daughters, you know, and vice versa. Like this, all relationships. You know, what is a dog? How do you deal with a dog? Like that. And so then, in this way, then they develop this whole process of, you know, social structure by which, based on religion of what is the nature of everything, then how one could interact in the world and benefit from the world, fulfill one's desires, but at the same time not be entangled in the world, so that one could uplift oneself, one could develop oneself. So then, that was understood as this is the actual purpose of religion. So in different places and different situations, there may be different details of application, but the principles must be the same. Therefore, then, how you say, religion is supposed to be for one's self-realization, understanding who, what is the self. The self is body. The self as mind, the self as intelligence, as ego, and the self as soul. And understanding the Supreme Self as God, as the Supreme Lord, and how to interact with God and with ourselves and those surrounding us. So then this became the body of knowledge as delineated. So this then has been established in the Vedic scriptures or the Indian scriptures, then the most complete of this exposition then is given in the Bhagavad Gita, explaining, you know, especially technically, what is the body, the soul, the material energy, you know, the whole science of it, the academic science of it. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam is then the practical application. How others have, following this path, have applied it in their life. How did they use it to advantage? How did they use this process of religion to understand who they were and to uplift themselves from the temporary nature of the material world to the transcendental nature of the spiritual world? So then the essence was given in these scriptures. Like that. I think we're getting a little late like that. So I won't go on too long. Is there anyone would like to ask any questions on this or anything?
If I may, Maharaj.
Yes.
As I understand it, according to Vedic scriptures, we are spirit soul.
Uh-huh.
And that we are originally from a spiritual side.
Yeah.
Now, so far, there's no explanation as to why we are here.
Oh, why we are here. Okay. Yes, okay, that's another. So we've gone from down to up. Now he wants to know how we got from up to down. So the soul, see, is that God is the source of energies. You know, that's by definition what is God. If you look in the dictionary, look up the word God, then you'll find it's the source of all things, the source of all energy, the source of all manifestations. So now in the manifestations, then he has his internal energy or the spiritual energy. And naturally, when you have internal, then you'll have to have external. So then the borderline between the material energy and the spiritual energy, that is where the souls are situated. That is called, in Sanskrit, called tatastha, which means they're marginal, they're borderline between the two. They're spiritual, but they're right on the border between the spiritual energy and the material energy. So then, this way, they could be engaged either in the spiritual world or in the material world. Those from the spiritual energy will only stay in the spiritual world. So then one would ask, well, why would the living entity be like this? Since God has expanded everything to expand that exchange of affection between himself and the living entities. Why would the living entities, means in Sanskrit, we're technically called jivas, the jiva tattva, jiva, the energy of jiva. So why would the marginal energy be marginal? Because then we see that that actually increases love. See, if someone loves you because they have to, then it's nice, but it's not as nice as if someone loves you because they want to. Therefore, then the living entities are given this independence to choose to love God if they want, or not choose to love God if they want. So then, if we choose to love God, then it's voluntary. That is by our choice. So that will expand the happiness and affection that God's already feeling towards the living entity. You know, it's just as the child expands from the parents, naturally there's affection. It's just natural affection. Because that is a reflection of the natural affection of God for the living entities. The living entities have expanded from God, so he has affection for them. But now, if they don't have a choice whether they can love him or not, then it's nice because interaction will be there. But it's more nice if they have that choice. So then we see is that here in this world, then it is full of living entities who made the choice to not love God. That they themselves wanted to be independent from God and try to find happiness here in this material world. So then the process of yoga is how to connect again with God. How to give up our being entrenched in the material consciousness and to elevate ourselves to the point of that consciousness of interaction with God. So we see here is relationships, if they're very deep, are very nice. But because of the temporary nature, we're limited. But in the spiritual realm, God is eternal, the soul is eternal. So those relationships will be very much appreciated. Because those can be appreciated eternally. So there's nothing that doesn't drop off. Material nature is temporary. So anything, no matter how nice it is, it must degrade. This is the nature of it. But the spiritual world is the opposite. No matter whatever nice it is today, it will develop. Because of the eternal nature, means whatever happiness is there, that will be eternal. Like you got some happiness by doing an activity, that will last eternally. Then you do another activity that will create more happiness, that will also last eternally. So by nature it just increases. It's just the scientific difference between them. Here it's whatever it is you do, it will drop off. Therefore today you eat something, it's very tasty, tomorrow you eat it, it's also tasty, next day a little less tasty, next day you want to change. You know, same with your music, same with your activities, same with your clothes, your hairstyle, everything. It's like, it's great today, but tomorrow you want something different. So, by that process is how we've come. Is that okay?
Rebel against Krishna, want to be like Krishna or something, and because of that, we were exiled in this prison world, this future sky. And could that be one of the reasons why we're here?
See, basically, is that it is natural you have a relationship. So, with God, that's just automatic. Like the child automatically has a relationship with the parents, even before they're born. As soon as the child is conceived, they have a relationship with the parents. So then one's natural relationship is there. Now, if one wants to operate that relationship and get the benefit of that, one can do. But if one doesn't, that is one's independence. Just like we see, the parents give the best that they can to the children, all whatever they can, whatever they like. But that may or may not be appreciated by the children, and they may or may not maintain that relationship. They may want to go out and be on their own, be independent. You know, but many times we see is they go out, they're on their own, they do what they like to do. But then later when they grow, they have their own children, then they kind of start to see what it is that the parents were trying to do. Maybe they did nicely, maybe not so nicely, but at least they attempted. And then many times we see is the relationship with the parents improves at that time when you actually understand the position. So same is the living entity doesn't have to interact with God. They have that independence. But the spiritual realm is for those who want to interact, because then otherwise it's a disturbance to their rights to be able to, in an unimpeded way, you know, interact with God. So the material world is created so that those who don't want to interact with God, they have a place, because they naturally, as a living entity, God wants to give them a position. He wants to give them their facility and freedom. You know, like the father, even the son has moved away, he still likes to send them money and still try to find out how he's doing and take care even from behind the scenes. So like that, then this place has been created. And then the living entity here can try to be God, try to be the center of attention, be the enjoyer, be the controller. But then we see with time, we fail in that. We are not the controller, not the enjoyer. And we get frustrated. So then that awakens in us naturally the question of then who are we? I thought I was the controller, I thought I was the enjoyer, I thought I was this, that, you know, rich, powerful, and then we end up nothing, right? So many persons, great, powerful, and then they find themselves nothing, right? Napoleon, very powerful, and then they catch him and stick him on an island somewhere, you know, in house arrest. Then, so naturally that would awaken the question, who am I? What I had the idea of who I was. I was big, powerful, you know, this, that. But then I find out, well, it's not. It doesn't always work. So how does that happen? How can that happen? How could others control me? Because these aren't us. If they were us, no one can take them away. Right? If I'm a wealthy person, how could anyone take it away? It can be taken away because I'm not a wealthy person. Right? Wealth and myself are two different things. Maybe they're together, maybe they're not. Right? But what is me is the soul. That I can count on. Right? I go from this lifetime to another lifetime. I'll be the same. But the body I'm in, the conditioned nature I'm in, the situation I'm in, one time I'm born in a wealthy family, one time in a poor family, one time in a, you know, very intelligent family, one time in a not very academically inclined family, one time in the city, one time in the country, you know, like this. So those change. So then we start to doubt who I am, because everybody tells us I'm the body, you know, you're Mr. Smith. You know, you live here, you know, you're, you know, middle-aged, Caucasian, you know, you work down at this place, that's who you are, right? Like if somebody has an accident, has amnesia, and they wake up, who am I, where am I? They'll say, oh, you're all these things, all according to your body and your activities. They'll never tell you, oh, you're the soul. And don't worry, you know, maybe you've forgotten temporarily about, you know, your material condition, but it's not important, it's not you anyway, so but you won't hear that. So, therefore, then the place has been designed so that the living entities can carry out their desires, try to fulfill their desires, but the difficulty is because it's not actually them. There's frustration. The satisfaction is not there. Yeah. Temporary maybe, but in the long run, the satisfaction isn't there. Therefore, then the Vedic scriptures and the sages then have given the, you know, keys on how to understand and traverse that path on understanding who we are and resituate ourselves back in the spiritual realm. Okay. Is that okay? So any other questions? Or? Yes.
I was just interested in your saying we're not a material body, we're not the intelligent. You go, my understanding of this teaching is that we're also not the causal body or the soul, but in fact we're the Atman, which is an energy or a type of words to it, but a sense of being which is prior to the soul, prior to a separateness from the absolute. My understanding is that we are that, the Atman,
yes,
which doesn't need relationship, which by its very nature is bliss.
But it's eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Yes. So soul is a word that's used in the modern sense. In the Christian sense, soul means the body, basically. So here, Atma has four definitions. Is that it means the gross body. It means the subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, and ego. It means the causal body, which is the idea that I am the controller and enjoyer. And it means the Atma proper, which is consisting of spiritual energy, of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So eternality is its nature, but happiness is not found in just being eternal. It's found in interacting with others.
Happiness on a sensory platform, whereas the nature of the Atma itself is bliss.
Yes, is peace, but there's something beyond peace. Peace comes when peace is the experience felt when there is a removal of a disturbance. Like you're very disturbed and anxiety, and then you go out into the countryside where there's no disturbance, and then you go, then there's peace. But if you stay in the countryside, then again, all the different things, and there's something bothering you there. So peace is a concept that comes from residing in the material world. In the spiritual world, the concept of peace, they're beyond that. So the peace is a position between the spiritual world and the material world. It is technically what is called in Sanskrit the Brahman. So Brahman realization, or realization of the eternality of spirit, then that creates peace. But then that doesn't address the actual positive happiness of the soul. It addresses the need of the soul to give up the material anxieties, which are very foreign to it. But it doesn't address the need for the spirit to interact with other spirits, because the spirit is an individual, is a conscious individual. So that interaction with other conscious individuals on the spiritual platform, free from any material sensuality or designations, that is then what the process of bhakti yoga talks about. Well, what you had mentioned before is the process of jnana yoga, of through knowledge, detaching yourself from the material world and thereby gaining eternal peace, like that. Anything else, or otherwise? Okay, thank you very much. So we'll stop here for the, you know, I say, most important part of the program. You know, the transcendental food. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.